everyone, and welcome to Empire Building, where we talk about how to build massive empires and even bigger lives. Today, we're going to talk about a dirty little word. And that dirty little word is profit. It's a dirty, dirty little word in business.
It is.
But before we get into it, I want to introduce myself. I'm Wendy Papazian.
I'm Seychelle Vanpool.
I'm Sarah Reynolds.
Let's dig in, guys.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Well, a lot of people, you know, when you're building your empire, they don't want to talk about profit.
That's right.
Yeah. All they want to talk about is revenue.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially the real estate industry.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or
it's a lot more fun to talk about revenue than profit.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, the number's bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Yes. We like big numbers, don't we?
We do.
And typically entrepreneurs are geared to growth.
Yeah.
And not expense management.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about expense management.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's the purpose of a business anyway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, I think part of your business is to, the purpose of your business is to fund your perfect life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. But and in order to do that,
you got
to
have profit.
You got to have profit. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, let's start out like from a very basic question, because I know some of our listeners out there are just doing baby steps in terms of their profitability and building their business. What's the difference between profit and revenue?
So revenue is the money that has come into the business that's on the upper line,
okay. right?
That's all of the money that has come in through sales, right?
So, and if you're in real estate, it's all your commission checks.
Yeah, so like gross commission checks. So all your commission checks added on together
before you
is
pay
your revenue.
Any expenses, before you pay any salespeople, just straight to the company or to you.
Correct.
Got it.
And profit is the number at the very bottom, right? After you pay all of expenses, after you pay all of your salespeople, after you pay all of your administrative team, you minus the revenue. Well, you do revenue minus your expenses, and that equals out to hopefully profit,
And that's your money in the bank at the end of the year, right?
Well, and Sarah,
don't forget taxes.
Oh, yeah, and taxes.
Absolutely.
The IRS.
Yes.
Yeah, 30 to 40% right there, everything you make.
Yep.
Well, and Sarah, you said a great word, which is a lot of businesses act as if it's hopefully profit at the end of the day, right? And so what we're going to talk about today is instead of moving from hopefully profit to purposefully profit.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
That's really where we want to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the first and foremost thing that you have to master is really expense management.
Expense management.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Making sure you're aligned with your expenses.
And that's not, it's not that fun.
No.
No. Nobody's like, woohoo, let's go get some drinks and manage our expenses.
Yes.
Yeah. I wish when we were sitting in Starbucks with Mr. Trey and we were doing expense management, there was like, maybe it was like an Irish car bomb or something other than just straight coffee because you need it after a little while.
Yep.
It's not so fun. How did you guys start with expense management? What did you do?
Well, I would say my profit and loss journey started, you know, my business grew very rapidly.
Yeah. It did.
And I was doubling and tripling my business and growing at the speed of light and not really knowing, you know, what was coming in and what was going out.
Sure. Yep.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And so I would literally be waking up in the middle of the night with a right? Thinking about that.
Yeah.
And so that's how that began for me. And that just began a purposeful journey about learning my numbers, knowing my numbers, because, you know, I'm like a lot of people. I didn't go to business school.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly like numbers. I never learned about how to read a P&L.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, those are all the things that you have to do when you start digging into your business.
Yeah.
Got to be successful.
Well, and you know, Wendy, you were bringing up in major corporations, right? There is a very small percentage of CEOs in Fortune 500 companies that are women.
Yeah, there was just an article written about
that.
Yeah.
So why do you guys think that is?
Well, there's probably lots of reasons.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons this article was speculating was that women tend to gravitate more towards the people like VP of marketing or chief marketing officer or head of HR. And none of those positions really have control over the money or the P&L. And typically, once you get to the CEO level, they want to see how you can manage the money.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you guys are going to become an empire builder, right? This is one of those basic skills that you need to master and just understand that it's a journey.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not necessarily a fun journey, but it's a journey.
No, it's a necessary one though.
Yeah.
It is.
And what I was saying to these guys earlier is that I think especially women, I hear a lot of women say, oh, I'm not good with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like numbers. I let my partner deal with that. They pay the bills. Mm-hmm. I actually had my sister-in-law say to me once that every person that she knew where the wife paid the bills ended in divorce. She actually told that to me.
Wow.
And she may even still believe that.
Wow.
And that's not like her.
Yeah.
And I pay the bills in the family.
Yeah.
And so that was always a little disheartening. And yet at the end of the day, I had the pleasure of going to the four-day MBA. Keith Cunningham hosts a four-day MBA. And it's a huge investment. It costs $7,000 to go.
Yeah.
And when I was there, I realized, wow, there's mostly men in this room. And my aha from that was that all of these men are working on becoming better at numbers.
Yeah.
All of these men are here working on, you know, it's not that they're intuitive at it or they're particularly wonderful. And so it's just it's a journey for all of us out there, especially women. If you want to become an empire builder, you got to let go of that limiting belief.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things with my sort of business journey is I got really good at learning the P&L, right? Yeah. And then 2 or 3 years ago, when my business started growing fast and like millions more in revenue each year, I was having those moments of not necessarily I didn't know what was coming in and out. I felt inadequate, like not skilled enough to handle this kind of money.
Interesting.
Right? And I was like, I need someone to help me. I need someone to come alongside me in terms of making these decisions. I almost had one of those moments of like, do I need to step down and hire a CEO that's more capable of knowing how to handle this kind of money that's coming in and the expenses? I remember when our payroll got to like 6 figures a month.
Wow.
Right. I mean, that was a scary time, right? When we hit that number.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Right. And so one of the things that I did is I learned to surround myself by people that take their profit and loss statement seriously.
Yeah.
And then I hired a coach to come alongside me where his main focus is on my P&L statement. Yeah. So every single month I send it to him and we go through it line by line. Mm-hmm. And he holds me accountable to the things that I said in terms of profitability numbers as well as expenses. And I remember the very first call with him, he said, I need you to cut 10%. Mm-hmm. from the budget. And I was like, okay. And it was at the time, like, I think it was like $30,000 that month. I said, oh, I can figure out $30,000. He goes, no, for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like writing the math and it was like $360,000.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
And I was like, how in the world am I going to cut $360,000?
That's a lot more than most businesses make in a year.
Yeah. And so I said, so I went to my team and I just told them, I said, I made a commitment. We've got to figure this out. And you would be shocked in terms of expense management if you just let your team know what the goal is and let them start thinking, okay, we do it this way. We could do this way. And this is how much it would save each year if we do that.
Well, I think that goes back to what are your values on your team?
Yes.
Right? Are your values efficiency?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Are your values being thrifty?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I have one of my key ops people is going on maternity leave in about a month. And she told me that she canceled her Boomerang account, which if you don't know, it's how you can kind of load up your emails for the future. Mm-hmm. It costs $14.95 a month. And she's like, I just wanted to let you know, I canceled my Boomerang account for the next 2 to 3 months just to save our team a little money, which it's like $45.
Yes.
Right. And which I love.
Yeah.
Because she knows that we watch our expenses.
Well, and if she's gonna take $45 serious, she's gonna take $4,500 serious.
Absolutely.
She's gonna take $45,000 serious, right? The way that they handle the small things, you know how they'll handle the big things.
I really like too that you're including your team in the P&L, that you're including them in the buy-in, not in just the profit or just the revenue, but also in the middle part, right?
Yes.
Which is the expense management aspect of that. Because without understanding the numbers as a team member, they can't have buy-in and ownership then in the expenses. So including them in that conversation and process allows them to feel empowered to make those decisions.
Yeah. And what has helped me is building their pay structure around that.
Yeah.
Like I won't go into all the details of that, but one of the big parts of it is profit increase, right? I learned early on to be very careful about tying people's pay to revenue increase,
right?
Mm-hmm. You want to focus on the profitability increase. And when they do that, they have personal buy-in. And then they're looking at things, hey, how can we do this different? How can we help? I mean, Gary Kelly Keller and how he set up Keller Williams is an amazing example of that with profit share.
Yeah,
right. Right?
I mean, it's amazing.
It is. Yep. And everyone looks at things differently.
Absolutely.
When you're sharing profit.
Absolutely.
Right. And you have to be held accountable to that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you end up saving a lot of money by just setting up their. Well, increasing your profitability by setting up team members' pay tied to profitability.
And if you look at the Millionaire Real Estate Agent, it talks about setting a profit share on your real estate team there.
Yes,
and
it does.
I can't remember what page it is,
yes.
but that's basically what we do.
Yep.
And you can set the threshold for profit share, whatever you want it to be.
Right. Yep. And regardless of what business you're in, whether it's real estate or insurance or clothing sales, it doesn't matter. The model on how a lot of the book is set up for the Millionaire Real Estate Agent actually translates into just about any other industry. It's just the cost of sales or the expenses might look a little bit different, but actually the modeling is still very similar.
It's the same.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, one of their books, I think, for the future is The Millionaire Small Business Owner.
Totally.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
One of the things that we do is that we have a finance meeting every single month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's me and my mom and our two key right-hand admin. And we have the P&L printed out. We have our bank statement printed out. And then we have we use American Express printed out. And we literally go line by line.
We do the exact same thing.
Awesome. I mean, it's to be honest, it's my least favorite meeting of the month.
It's so boring.
It's so boring.
Yeah.
And it's very detail oriented. Like, okay, who paid $6.99 at
that's this literally
price?
What it is.
And what was that for?
Okay,
and
I have this expense here for $4.31. You're like,
exactly.
I made a crazy face.
Yes.
It's infuriating stuff.
It is. But it's important. I mean, it's been business changing by having that set time and then all us getting into the room. It takes 3 to 4 hours a month and reviewing it and making sure. And then we also are reviewing return on investment. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because all of us are spending money.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
We've already talked about spending money on people, right? Payroll.
Right.
But then also any lead gen.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I'd love to know how you create a culture around productivity and profitability.
Yes.
Because there's lots of businesses out there that at the end of the day, they're just not profitable.
Yes.
And they don't even really know it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the saddest things about the real estate industry. We have this ability to have a massive profit margin. You know, the Millionaire Real Estate Agent will tell us that you can have a profit margin of 40% or more.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And most agents, they just don't even know what they're doing. So how do you create that culture?
You know, I think you have to reward the behavior you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so for us, when it comes down to productivity and profitability, we, in advance of that P&L meeting, we actually have our financial manager on our team who's like a fractional CEO, if you will, or I guess fractional CFO, if you will. She's our chief financial officer. She emails out anybody who has one of the company credit cards ahead of time and has them itemizing, right, every single client that the expense went to and how that went. And then she ties that back into the P&L so we don't have to line item it as much during the meeting. But it forces every single team member to look at their expenses every single month.
Smart.
And then they CC it back to us. So it allows them to be like, oh, wait, hold on. That was a personal expense you know, that got mixed in accidentally. Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
And I think it's okay to have those profitability conversations with your whole team.
Yes, absolutely.
That's something I've gotten more and more comfortable with. That has not been a comfortable thing
for me.
I think it goes back to profit being a dirty little word.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the topic and the title of this podcast is perfect for it. I think that I had a limiting belief in my head that if we were massively profitable, that was almost selfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that my team members might feel like, well, you're making too much and I should come ask for more. It's totally all my own assumptions and my own limiting beliefs. They've done nothing to make me feel that way. But I had a real aha moment when we put out the P&L 1 year. It was right when our market took a big correction in 2017 in Dallas. And we showed them where expenses and revenue were for the second half of that year, but it was a really difficult 6 months. We went through a major shift. And our team members were asking first and foremost about profit and wanting to see the health of the company first. And I'll tell you, that's not something I ever thought would have been the conversation.
I love
and it
that.
It was really amazing.
Well, and you don't have to share with them all the nitty-gritty details, but I think helping the people on your team have a financial education is really important.
I do too.
I remember, we're a very lead gen based team with an inside sales department and things like that. And I remember the very first time, I was like, I'm going to ask. I started getting some feedback from the team as if they thought we weren't, that we didn't spend a lot of money on marketing, that they thought it was not very expensive on lead generation. And so I asked one team meeting, just guess, can you guys guess around what we spend each month on lead generation? My mouth about dropped with how low they thought. They did not realize. I mean, this goes back to the productivity piece because profitability without having the conversation about productivity, they go hand in hand, right? And I think it's really important for our team members to know what we're risking each month. What is the risk that we're making? And they don't know, right? And that was eye-opening for me that they have no idea how much it costs
in terms of business.
To run a business. To run the lead gen.
All they
piece.
See is that top line revenue.
And I just share with them,
They're
I said,
Sarah made $10 million last year.
Yes. And they think that's sitting in my bank, right? I mean, and so that's what they're seeing, right? And so it's really important for us to be reminding them of what the expenses are, reminding them of what we're doing. And then also tying that into, hey guys, when you're at the table and you decide to not collect our fee. That we set. I've budgeted for a set fee, but you're taking that upon yourself at that appointment to not do that, to not negotiate. That's hurting our bottom line because I'm risking, I've already spent the money to get you there, right? And so now you need to do your part, which is to collect our set fee, And so just making sure that we're having those conversations. And
I think that's huge.
They can be hard at times.
I think it's huge because I think that, you know, the thing about owning a business is you're the one that's putting in all the risk. At the end of the day, you know, it's your butt on the line. And all those people that are working for you, they're counting on you to do the things that you need to do. And that's why you actually get to take home a bigger slice of the pie. Is because you have taken a much larger risk.
At Her Best Life, we're not just building businesses. We're growing our net worth, leveraging our platforms for good, and living our big lives. And that's what Empire Circle is all about. It's an executive membership designed for ambitious business women leaders who want more. More growth, more profit, more impact, and more freedom. This is where powerful deep connections meet powerful results. Apply now at herbestlife.com and join us by stepping in to Empire Circle.
Well, and the perk to, I think, one of the benefits when you work on a team as a team member, having started as a team member first and then now running a team second, is that as a team member, your net take home is actually a net. So oftentimes, your commission that you're earning from the team, outside of probably keeping your license and your car gassed, right, is that you are actually bringing home a net take home. And what they're measuring us against is gross commissions of the entire company versus what they're netting. And Wendy, you and I have talked about this. We've had team members in the past that have made in net more than we did as a business owner.
As you're growing your business.
As you're growing.
It's totally doable.
You know, and we didn't shout that from the rooftops, but we've definitely had years where that, you know, we've had team members net more than us, even though we're willing to take on the risk. And that's, I don't begrudge that. That's not a negative. It's great. But
so let's talk about some
steps. We have to understand that.
Some steps to take to get buy-in to profitability. So number one is, I think, how you set up the pay structure.
It starts there first.
It starts there, setting up the pay structure to make sure that they're rewarded for profitability, like a profit share system,
That's a very easy, low risk way.
It is.
Because you can set a threshold for your profit. So you can say, listen, the minimum amount of profit I want to make is $500,000. And everything above that, I'm going to not give it all out, but I'm going to split it between me and other people on the team. And I think that's what the millionaire real estate agent says. It's about $500,000. But you can set it up any way you want.
That's right.
Love that.
But if you do that, I would counsel to think about the long haul. So you might be okay at one point giving away a certain amount of money. But think about when you're at Sarah's stage and you're making $14 million a year. Does that still hold up? So just just project that in the future.
And just being very careful about pay structure and when you're, you know I started out with like paying a per deal type of situation, which is very nice and when you're smaller.
Because it's scalable when you're little.
When you're little, it works. But when you scale, I mean, think $400 times 1,200 transactions. I mean, that's an easy way to be out of profitability.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about how are you guys tracking like return on investment
for the
investments that mm-hmm. you're making?
I think the first piece for us is the quality of tracking the source coming in.
Yes.
I think we realized...
Say that again, because I'm not following you. What does that mean?
So we track 3 deep on sources coming into our team. So sources,
you mean like leads?
Leads, okay. Right? Here's a great example. Wendy has a client that she referred us 10 years ago, right? Who then sent us to somebody else, right? That then sent us that client. Mm-hmm. Well, I can track that person back to Wendy, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
As the original procurement of the relationship, because I wouldn't have had that without that. And I think when you're rewarding team members based on growing their own sphere of influence or growing their own database, you have to be really skilled at digging into tracking that mm-hmm. to make sure you truly understand what the actual source was. And Sarah, you've done a really good job of that online, right? And tracking online to offline. And how you guys have done that in your business. But I think you really have to dig into how did you actually hear about us? What actually prompted you to call mm-hmm. us? Because sometimes I think we reward in ROI the actual wrong metric or the wrong source.
Yes. It's important to, I believe in having a centralized lead system.
Yes.
Even if it's your agents, mm-hmm. having a leads manager, that's their job is to centralize all of the leads and making sure that they're put into source. One of the biggest things that I learned from the Think Like a CEO podcast mm-hmm. was when Gary and Jay were talking about the return on people.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
That spoke to me so much because right now in mm-hmm. my empire, I'm making some really big hires.
Big hires.
Mm-hmm. And some scary ones.
Yeah.
Like some salaries that I've never paid before. Right. And when you're doing that, it can be extremely scary. And I was in conversation with this guy for about 6 months. And I was scared. I knew that he was the right hire for our organization, mm-hmm. but I was scared. And I listened to that podcast and it changed me because what Gary said is with people will always be your biggest investment mm-hmm. you make. And you will know if you hire the right one, because within 90 days, they're going to give you a return on
that investment.
Mm-hmm. And he said, how you want to look at it. I mean, this was so powerful. Mm-hmm. He said, how you want to look at it is is your business strong enough to sustain that salary for 90 days? You're not risking that whole salary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're only risking the 90 days. Mm-hmm. And then if they're not, if they don't pass at 90 days, right, they're out of your organization.
Right.
So that's all you risk. And he mentioned, you know, any good business, right, should be able to sustain 90 days of someone. And I think it's so powerful to look at return on sources and your return mm-hmm. on expenses, but making sure we look at return on people.
Yeah. And I would even just jump in and say, you don't even have to think about that kind of return on a big, scary hire.
That's right.
For mm-hmm. most people, the scariest hire that they're ever going to make is their first operational person, their
so
first
true.
Assistant.
That's so true.
It is the scariest decision for me personally.
Yes.
And so, you know, the good advice that I got was the same advice that you heard in that podcast.
Yes.
I got it 10 years ago. And that was that Gary said, listen, you're not making an investment of 12 months for this person.
Yeah.
And you have to hold them accountable so that you look up in 90 days and you've freed up enough of your time back that you can go and you can make that money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even if it's a part-time virtual assistant in the Philippines.
Yes, absolutely.
Are they giving mm-hmm. you enough time back to justify that salary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking at return on people for our business, we started having some, you know, key performance indicators mm-hmm. that we put in place to where the goal is for each team member to bring in 5 times their salary, right? In tracking that. That's something new that we're working on this year because mm-hmm. not something that we necessarily track all the time.
And where did you come up for that number? Is it just kind of 5 times your salary?
I talked to different teams
people?
And sort of masterminded, and that's what it sounded like was sort of... Yeah.
I mean, so really 10 times. If you hire someone and you're paying them $70,000, you would expect to get a $350,000 return.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so looking at that, I mean, that's what a good assistant would do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you think about it,
yeah.
Either by systems that they implement and or referrals, working their mm-hmm. sphere of influence,
right.
things like that. But making sure I've always been pretty good at the sourcing part and looking at the return on the investment in terms of lead gen and expenses that we made.
Right.
Making sure we're looking at the return of the people matter too, because mm-hmm. they are the biggest investment. And then if you think about the impact that you can have on hundreds of more people, if you are looking at that and see, wow, this one person changed my organization.
Mm. Yes.
And you can hire more.
And think of the converse. Think about the impact one bad person can have on the profitability of your organization.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, I think we've all probably had some expensive...
Could be devastating.
Expensive.
Millions of dollars, right?
So one of the things that is we have found to be super important is just making sure that we have a budget.
Yeah.
Right? And the budget should be a percentage based on the revenue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And so a budget for occupancy, a budget for all of your staff, mm-hmm. a budget for lead generation, a budget for cost of sales. Mm-hmm. Right? Paying your salespeople.
Explain that to people.
A cost of sales is any cost that is attributed to that sale happening.
Okay.
So a buyer's agent, a listing agent, an inside sales agent potentially, all of that can be a cost of sale.
Mm-hmm. So if they don't get paid if the deal doesn't go through.
Correct.
Right.
Yep. They do not get paid if the deal doesn't go through. That's a way better way to say it, Wendy. So, but focusing on measuring that. Right. So every month we're looking at where is our future cost of sale percentage and making sure that we're within
alignment
within the budget that we've set. Right. And so making sure you set that every single year and knowing where you need to hit.
Well, and not to like harp on The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, great book co-written by Gary Keller and my husband.
Yes.
Buy several copies. but there is a budget model in there.
There is.
And they give us all of the things that you're talking about and what it should look like, what it could look like if you modeled out your business.
I was hoping our listeners thought this was all my idea.
Okay. Well. you plussed it.
Yes, I did.
You did plus it.
You plussed it.
No.
You're the $10 million real estate agent.
That's right.
All of this comes from Millionaire Real Estate
Agent. We're just going to buy 10 copies of the book
exactly.
and give it to Sarah. And you get 10 million. This year.
Yes.
14 this year.
So let's, before we close, let's dive in. I think all of us have been in a position in our business where maybe profitability isn't what we wanted it to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What did you do? What did we do in that situation? I've had some of these calls with friends before. And I mean, the first thing I say is, I've been there.
Yeah.
Right? Where we're not hitting the numbers we need to hit.
Yeah.
I think the biggest freak out for us has been when a market shift happens quickly.
Mm.
And because it happens slowly and then suddenly.
What's a market shift?
A market shift, right, is when...
No, I'm just kidding, because I live in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, well, you guys haven't had one in too long, so you're probably due.
Yeah.
You know, we were last to the dance, you know, in the big downturn, and we've been first. Like, there was a Wall Street Journal article in November after we had shifted in July that said, the housing boom is coming to an end and it starts in Dallas. Mm. And I was like, great.
Mm.
But I think when those shifts happen... Fear sets in with clients, which means that there's a lack of decision. And then the lack of decision creates delay in contracts. And so your a top line revenue stalls out before your expenses get corrected.
Yes.
And you have a good 30 to 60 day, is this a funk? Oh no, this is not a funk, right? And you have to immediately and swiftly start hacking away at the budget to figure out how you do it. And for us, our opinion is always preserve people first. And so we've made it through two downturns without having to cut people loose that are crucial to the business, right? That's the one you don't sacrifice.
That's one
if
of
you
the
can.
Things that I loved about Keller Williams International is that during the downturn they didn't let a single person go.
Right. And I think if you can afford to do that, that's number one, because you probably have a lot of fat you've let get away with it when times are good, right?
Yeah.
That you
yeah.
can go in and cut. But that for us is how we did it, right? Is then we went back to weekly P&L audits.
Yeah.
Just like we did with the red pens and coffee.
Well, and a good exercise I would say that everybody out there could do is really, why don't you look at your P&L and you cut your expenses in half?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just do that exercise. And then just know if crisis happens, if something happens, you're going to do that in that order. And you've already thought about it and you're
Love
not
that.
In crisis mode.
Yep.
And you already know what's going to happen.
That's right.
I have two rules, that being the first one.
Love that.
And then really close behind that is you pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get back in it.
Yeah. You get
you
back
do.
In. Yeah, it. I know that.
Yeah. You get back into lead gen. You get back face to face, belly to belly with clients. And you make things happen. And I've been able to do that by just like literally picking up the phone. Mm-hmm. And spending, you don't have to just lead gen for 3 hours a day. You can do 8.
Absolutely.
Right? Get on the phone. And by doing those two things, you can turn your P&L around very, very quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love that. Yep. Well, you guys, this has been an awesome episode where
it
we're talking about productivity with profitability, right?
Yeah.
I think we feel like we've conquered the dirty little word
yes.
today. So you have no reason to be afraid of it anymore
yes.
with the word profit. And we want to thank you for joining us on another episode of Empire Building. Stay tuned for the next one, and we can't wait to talk soon.
Thanks for listening to Empire Building. If you like what you heard, join our tribe by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. And help us spread the word by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Until next time, wishing you a life worth living. And remember, you are an empire builder.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.